This is a Friday edition of Ozarks at Large. I'm Kyle Kellums. A memorial service will be held tomorrow for Jefferson Thomas, one of the nine black students who integrated Little Rock Central High School in 1957. Thomas died last month at the age of 67. Reporter Michael Hiblin of KUAR in Little Rock was the only reporter present the last time all nine of the students reunited. And today has Thomas's thoughts about what happened and a look at what's being planned for tomorrow.
Okay, so all of you, look
yes.
at the camera,
okay?
Sir, can you twist towards me totally? That's it.
It was a photo shoot by The New Yorker
Incredible.
That brought the Little Rock Nine together one final time last November.
Beautiful!
Standing in front of Central
Hold
High,
that.
They posed as part of a series on civil rights icons. I was brought in by the magazine to interview all nine, including Jefferson Thomas.
That's always great to all nine of us to be here together. Of course, it gets a little silly. We were robbed so much of a typical teenager growing up that whenever we get back together, we kind of go back and pick up some of the silly things teenagers do.
Thomas wound up becoming the first of the nine to die. On that afternoon, he talked about what it was like being a 15-year-old, having to brave angry segregationist mobs with the national media following the crisis.
We were just kids, and I was trying to figure out what did I do to deserve that. You know, I really didn't see that we were doing anything wrong. And got involved in it and couldn't quit because we were not doing anything wrong.
Thomas said after growing up among both black and white children, he thought he would be eventually welcomed by his classmates. But he told me he was wrong.
I changed my belief that if we can get past that violent mob of adults outside, get into the school, other teenagers would welcome us because teenagers are smarter than adults anyway.
Mm-hmm.
So I thought we would be welcome inside the school. I wasn't really disappointed until after we got in and I found out that the first couple of days we were welcome. But then someone organized the white students, and they would either harass us or they would turn and look the other way, wouldn't say anything, give us a silent treatment. And that was the rough part of knowing that teenagers could do other teenagers that way.
It would take President Eisenhower sending the army to Little Rock to get the nine into Central, against the wishes of white segregationists and Governor Orville Faubus. After graduating from high school in 1960, Thomas went to college, served as an infantry squad leader in Vietnam, then spent 27 years working as a civil servant in Columbus, Ohio. As one of the Little Rock Nine, he also spoke regularly about his experiences. In my interview last November, he said he has one key regret about how things have turned out in the nation's schools.
I see segregation within the schools. The schools would say it's not segregated, but when you go inside to speak or to just a visit, to walk through the halls, you see the students have separated themselves along certain lines, not segregated, but they are separate a lot. And it's sort of just discouraging, I guess. But I can't expect everybody to see the world the way I do.
Jefferson Thomas died last month of pancreatic cancer at the age of 67. Tomorrow, a memorial service will be held in front of Central at the Reflecting Pool. Spirit Trickey is a spokeswoman for the Central High National Historic Site.
This is a chance for Arkansans to come together and honor Jefferson Thomas and, you know, his sacrifices and the role that he played in making this world really a better place, not just education, but also making strides and advances in terms of race relations in this world.
Thomas's son, Jefferson Thomas Jr., will be speaking at the event. Representing the surviving members of the Little Rock Nine will be Minnie Jean Brown Trickey. Governor Mike Beebe, Congressman Vic Snyder, and a group of current students from Central are also taking part. The memorial begins tomorrow afternoon at 5 and is open to the public. For Ozarks at Large, I'm Michael Hiblin in Little Rock.
This is Ozarks at Large. The Rogers Public Library Foundation is conducting its annual Conversations with Writers series of events this weekend. This year's featured writer is Carol Higgins Clark, author of several mystery and suspense novels featuring Reagan Riley, Private Eye. Ms. Clark has penned more than a dozen books centered around Riley's ability to solve a mystery, each of those novels with a one-word title, the most recent, Wrecked. During her visit to Northwest Arkansas, she'll conduct a master class for Benton County High School students, and tomorrow morning, she'll participate in a Conversations breakfast event at John Q. Hammond Center in Rogers. Tickets for that event are $55, and the price of admission includes a signed copy of Carol Higgins Clark's latest novel. For Carol Higgins Clark, the first introduction to writing came when she volunteered to retype her mother's first novels. Mary Higgins Clark is one of the best-selling suspense novelists in the world. Carol Higgins Clark says she can remember when her mother's novels first began attracting attention.
It was the summer of 1975. Her book came out, Where Are the Children, came out in August. Well, I started doing this retyping for her in June or July. It came out in hardback, and I guess it did okay, but it was when it came out in paperback the next year that it became a bestseller.
And what was that like? I mean, you know, things changed then.
Oh, well, it was very exciting because, it hadn't been easy for her. She was 36 when my father died, had five kids, and went to work. And, you know, there wasn't a lot of money or anything like that. And she was sending us all to college and law school. And so when that book became a bestseller, we were so excited. As a matter of fact, we were up at my brother's graduation at Dartmouth. It was 1976, and he was at graduation practice, and my mother and my sister and I wandered into the bookstore in town, and I looked up at the wall, and they had an advanced copy of that Sunday's New York Times bestsellers list. And I looked at it, and I got to number 10. I said, Mom, you're on the list. We didn't even know. In those days, you might not have found out the way you do now, way in advance. And we were so excited. We went to the Hanover Inn, had champagne, and it was just great.
Well, now let me ask you about Reagan Riley, because Reagan is the daughter of a successful mystery writer.
My publisher suggested that. When I spoke to the publisher, I said, this character, she's a private investigator, and they said, make her mother a mystery writer. I said, okay. And I didn't know what was going to happen with it. We just laughed. And so, again, I didn't know what was going to become of all this when I started writing my first book.
How did you write it? Did you set aside time every day, or when you got time for it?
Oh yeah, I was just did it. They were interested, so they gave me a relatively small advance to live on for, to see if I could to see what I could come up with. And I had gone to St. Clair's Hall in Oxford for a term in college. It's not a part of the university, but it's a school there. And I had also taken the QE2 from England to New York. And I thought, well, I think it would be fun to set a mystery in Oxford and also on a cruise ship. So I started with that idea. And I thought Reagan goes back to a reunion of people she went there with for a term. And her roommate, who had left school right before it ended, everyone thinks she ran away, but her remains are discovered. It's 10 years later. And I just started working on it. And of course, that was the hardest one to write because I was new, and writing is obviously different from retyping a book. But happily, it was well reviewed and it sold, and I was on to the next one.
And that was, that first book, of course, was Decked. And since then, we've had Snagged, Iced, Twanged, Fleeced, Jinxed, Popped, Burned, Hitched, Laced, and Zapped. Do you cursed and wrecked? Right, that's right. Do you come up with when does the title? When does that title reveal itself to you?
Well, generally, when I'm thinking about what it's going to be, the titles happen. My mother came up with the title Decked for the first one because we were thinking of something that related to a cruise ship, and then I had gone to a pantyhose convention with someone I was dating who had a pantyhose business.
Wait a second. I'm sorry. That's the first time I think I've ever heard that sentence.
I know. Well, exactly, right? And I thought, I've got to use this in a book. How many writers have been to pantyhose conventions? And I thought, how about a murder at a pantyhose convention? So I said, if that was decked, this should be snagged. And that's how the one-word titles happened by accident. And now they just kind of come up regarding the subject matter. The book Iced was set in Aspen. The book where they got married was Hitched. And then they honeymooned in Ireland, so I called it Laced. And Cursed was about a character who feels so unlucky all the time. And I don't know, I just figure out what one word ending in ED, one syllable, will go with what I'm writing about.
Do you have to have some sort of flow chart for what a character has done, what they might do, how they might interact with somebody else?
No, when I'm writing, I have some poster boards and I take a lot of notes about the subject matter and write down characters and what they might do. But then when you start writing, things start to happen. I mean, I sit and think a lot about, well, would this work or that work? But somehow you just keep working and hopefully it all comes together. But I do toss around a lot of ideas and write them down on these poster boards. And it's always interesting for me to look back and say, oh, I didn't use this and I didn't use that, but I did use this.
When you have the conversation with the Rogers Public Library Foundation, there are going to be a lot of people there who love your books and want to hear what you have to say. There will be aspiring writers or people who think someday they might be an aspiring writer. I'm sure you get asked all the time, what's the first step? What's the one thing that someone who's going to try to sit down and write should understand?
Well, that it's not easy. Yeah. Not to take rejection too hard. To write as often as they can, and to read the kind of stories they might like to write. And I also tell people to take a class, particularly adults who aren't in school. It's good if you sign up for a writing class and you get assignments and you have to bring work back in. As a matter of fact, my sister-in-law, who was my roommate from college, who married my brother, she decided to take a screenwriting class, and she left me a message today. She goes, it was her first class last night, and she wants to try and write a screenplay based on one of our Christmas books. And she goes, it was so much fun. I loved it. And she's never taken a writing class before, and she just started last night. So I would say anybody who might want to do it, it's to get that energy from being in a class, but also to just not be afraid and sit down and do it. That's the hardest part sometimes, is sitting in the chair and getting started, just letting the fear dissolve and just putting it down, because what you write isn't going to be set in stone, and you don't even have to show it to anybody. We spoke at a luncheon today, and a woman asked me about that, and she said, oh, I've just never done it. I was afraid. I said, well, try. You don't have to show it to anyone right away. But if you like to write, just at least try.
Carol Higgins Clark is the author of many best-selling mystery novels featuring private investigator Reagan Riley, including the latest titled Wrecked. She'll be the keynote author at tomorrow morning's breakfast conversation at John Q. Hammond Center in Rogers, sponsored by the Rogers Public Library Foundation. For more information about the event, rplfoundation.org. For more information about the author, carolhigginsclark.com. Tickets for tomorrow's event are $55 and include a signed copy of Wrecked. Also during her visit, Carol Higgins Clark conducted a master class for Benton County High School students. And you can hear more from our conversation, including if the author would actually go on a real vacation with her literary creation, Reagan Riley, who always manages to find danger even on her honeymoon. That and more from our conversation available at OzarksAtLarge.com. This is Ozarks at Large. This week, KUAF's music director, P.J. Hrabowski, sat down with Bob Mueller, a member of the University of Arkansas music faculty, a composer, a pianist, and the conductor of the University of Arkansas Symphony Orchestra. P.J. asked Bob about this year's edition of the University Symphony.
We're a little bit bigger than we were last year.
All right.
We've added some cellos and violins.
Okay, so how big?
We're around 75, 80, something
wow,
like that.
Wow, that's great. Okay, now I was thinking about sports. You know, sometimes in sports, people say, you know, they have a young team this year. Or they have a more mature team this year. How does that fare with the symphony this year?
Well, it's just like a sports team. We lose good people every year through graduation, but we also gain good people. And that's exactly what it is.
Okay, is it freshman through senior, or is it just...
Freshman through senior and a few graduate students as well.
Okay.
We gained some great graduate students, some great new freshmen, but we also graduated some great players too.
And hopefully they're going to go off and become teachers or become famous or...
Hopefully,
do
yes.
something wonderful.
Yes.
The University of Arkansas Symphony Orchestra will perform Monday night at Walton Arts Center. And during their conversation, recorded in the Richard B. Atkinson Studio at KUAF, P.J. Hrabowski and Bob Mueller previewed Monday night's concert, which will feature Beethoven's Sixth Symphony and Tchaikovsky's First Piano Concerto.
Yes, it was... composed in 1874, finished around December of that year, and when he showed it to his friend and mentor, Nikolai Rubinstein, of course, Rubinstein hated it from the beginning.
Which he didn't expect.
No, he didn't. And it was devastating to Tchaikovsky because he had put a lot of himself into the piece, and he ended up sending the piece to Hans von Bülow, who premiered it in Boston.
But didn't he originally dedicate it to Rubinstein?
Yes, but he had to tear up that dedication. Yeah. And eventually Rubinstein came around.
Yeah, and eventually Rubinstein even had it performed, correct?
Yes, and played it himself. His original comment to Tchaikovsky was something like, it's unplayable and throw it away. It's not worth working on. But there, it's true that some of the passages originally were rather unplayable, and Tchaikovsky did fix them a bit.
But Tchaikovsky had a very fragile ego.
Oh, extremely fragile. So you can just imagine the scene with Rubinstein saying it's no good, and then Tchaikovsky saying, well, I'm not going to change a note, and I'll just give it to someone else. And eventually Tchaikovsky maybe saw that some of the passages could be improved a bit, and he did. And eventually Rubinstein realized that, hey, everybody else is playing this piece and audiences love it, so maybe I should play it too.
Maybe I was wrong.
Yes.
Yeah. Oh, and today audiences love it. So who's going to be performing in this this piano concerto?
Our very own Yura Margulis from the music department, an internationally regarded pianist of high esteem. And he's got a very powerful technique. If you've ever heard him play, you can sit in the back of the hall hear every note. He's a great, great performer, and we're so fortunate to have him play with us.
Do you know he actually christened our performance studio?
I heard that, yes.
He did. It was wonderful. So he's going to be performing the piano concerto, the Tchaikovsky piano concerto, which will be the first half
of the
concert. Okay, what about the second half?
Second half is the Beethoven Symphony Number 6.
Oh, I love that one.
We need some calming of the waters after the passionate Tchaikovsky.
From the passionate to the pastoral.
To the pastoral, yes.
Now this also, there was some controversy because, you know, this wasn't like the other things that Beethoven had written. And, oh my goodness, this had nature things in it. You just don't do music about nature and spring and storms and things like that. I guess people were just kind of thrown, but it was Beethoven, so it had to be okay.
Yes. Well, there were some precursors to that. If you remember, Haydn had done some things in some of his symphonies that were semi-representational of something outside of music. And so Beethoven had actually, I think when he was 12 or 13, had a piano piece published, and in the same catalog was another piece by a composer named Knecht, who had written a symphony for 15 instruments in 5 movements based on a scene in the country with a storm and a celebration after the storm. Somewhat similar to what Beethoven did, but of course Knecht's music is completely forgotten, as well as he himself, and Beethoven's music is immortal.
And I think another thing people might think about is, you know, by the time he wrote his Sixth Symphony, he was already deaf.
Yes.
You know, and he you know, a lot of people thought of him as kind of a grumpy guy. And he loved nature. He loved hiking. He loved walking every day, walking in the woods. And I think, to me, when I think of this symphony, that's what I think of when I think of Beethoven out walking in the woods and the music in his head. And it's just, and when you think of the introduction, it's been used in so many things, in movies, even cartoons.
Yes, cartoons, Fantasia, and it was in the movie Soylent Green.
I even saw it on The Simpsons. I even heard it on The Simpsons.
Yes, yes.
It's just a very famous opening.
It's a perfect representation of being outdoors.
And I think it's a great, it's one of those symphonies that's great to play in any season.
Yes, yes, because you can have great weather in any season, and you can have a storm in any season. Because one of the movements is, of course, a storm.
Yes.
But it's very short.
Yes. Well, a short storm is a good storm.
Yes.
but it's going to be, wow, what a way to open the season. You know, Tchaikovsky's Piano Concerto No. 1, Beethoven's 6th. That's going to be a wonderful performance. Now, is everybody ready?
Oh, we're ready. We're ready and waiting to go.
Okay. Any more rehearsals between now and the 11th?
Oh, thankfully so, yes.
Okay, well, again, the performance is, well, first of all, University Symphony, the University of Arkansas Symphony Orchestra, conducted by Bob Mueller, coming up Monday, October 11th, 7:30 p.m., Walton Arts Center. For tickets, you can call 443-5600, or you can go online to waltonartscenter.org. Bob, I want to thank you so much for coming by. When's the next concert?
I think our second concert is around the 7th of December.
Will you come back?
I certainly will.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you.
For Ozarks at Large, I'm P.J. Hrabowski.
P.J. Hrabowski talked with Bob Mueller, the conductor of the University of Arkansas Symphony Orchestra, earlier this week in the Richard B. Atkinson Studio at KUAF. This is Ozarks at Large.
Robert Coolbell, a member of Cool and the Gang, was born on this date in 1950. This American funk and pop band from Jersey City, New Jersey, was one of the first successful self-contained black bands of the 1970s. The group's first charting single, Cool and the Gang, a horn-driven, highly rhythmic instrumental dance track, was followed by a steady string of similar singles through 1976. The band's commercial breakthrough came in 1973 with the album Wild and Peaceful, which featured the singles Funky Stuff, Jungle Boogie, and Hollywood Swinging, all of which reached the rhythm and blues top 10 charts. Cool and the Gang's sound was an innovative fusion of jazz, African rhythms, and street funk that established the band as an innovator in black music until the onset of the disco era. However, when the group's single Open Sesame was reissued on the soundtrack for the motion picture Saturday Night Fever in 1977, Cool and the Gang shifted emphasis toward pop and disco. In 1979, the band added a new lead vocalist and producer, which led to a cleaner, pop-driven sound and to the crossover single Ladies' Night. Numerous hits followed, including the number one hit Celebration in 1980, as well as the sentimental pop songs Joanna in 1983 and Cherish in 1985. Cool and the Gang charted more pop singles than any other act in the 1980s. The band has continued to record and tour into the early 21st century. A dedication to last throughout the years. So bring your good times and your laughter too. We gon' celebrate and party with you. Come on now. James Kelly Hampson passed away on this date in 1956. The amateur archaeologist's plantation in Mississippi County yielded rich artifacts dating back hundreds of years. Hampson's collection of about 40,000 items was subsequently donated to the University of Arkansas. A number of items are now on display in the Henry Clay Hampson II Museum in Wilson, which is managed by the Arkansas Department of Parks and Tourism. Hampson was one of only a few amateur archaeologists to be honored with an obituary in American Antiquity. The Great Chicago Fire erupted on this date in 1871. The blaze destroyed 4 square miles of the city, killing about 250 people and leaving some 90,000 homeless. For Ozarks at Large, I'm Antoinette Grajeda.
This is Friday Ozarks at Large. I'm Kyle Kellums, and not with me in the Anthony and Susan Hoy News Studio, but somewhere in Florida, St. Petersburg, I believe, is Becca Bacon-Martin, the editor of What's Up, found in Northwest Arkansas Newspapers. Hello, Becca.
Hey, Kyle. I am in St. Petersburg, Florida, at the Poynter Institute for Media Studies, the mecca for journalists, and I'm here for the American Association of Sunday and Features Editors Convention, because our newspaper was honored for our features section. And so I'm here learning all sorts of cool things about how to be involved in the newspaper business in the ever-changing world it is.
Well, congratulations on that honor, and have fun while you're in the sunshine.
beautiful, beautiful place. But if you happen to be in Northwest Arkansas, it's all about music and all about the Walton Arts Center this weekend. They're so busy, I don't know how they're managing to keep their balls in the air. Tonight is the Tierney Sutton Band.
Two shows.
Two shows as part of the Starlight Music Club series. The band's fronted by Grammy-nominated jazz vocalist Tierney Sutton, and they'll perform at 8 and 10 o'clock in the Star Theater. Tickets start at $16. The band's most recent disc, Desire, was released in January 2009. Also tonight, the Chamber Music Society of Lincoln Center is at the Walton Arts Center to perform three examples of the quintet genre: Mozart's Viola Quintet in E-flat major, Mendelssohn's Viola Quintet in A major, and Brahms' Clarinet Quintet in B minor. In other words, if you love those composers or you love the quintet form of music, they've got you covered. On Saturday, Cuban musical legend Omar Portuondo celebrates her 80th birthday with a performance at the Walton Arts Center at 8 o'clock. She's famous as part of the Buena Vista Social Club music scene in Havana, and her most recent album, Gracias, earned her a Latin Grammy. And coming on Tuesday, pop singer Chris Isaak. Look at the genres we just crossed.
I know.
Isn't that amazing? Chris Isaak, best known for his hit Wicked Game. His show starts at 7 o'clock, and tickets start at $48. That's just the tip of the iceberg for this weekend, of course. So this is where you grab a pencil, hang on, we're going to go fast. The first ever offshoot film festival started at noon today, continues through Sunday at the UARC Ballroom and the UA Global Campus in Fayetteville. Tickets are $5 for a single screening or $30 for a weekend pass. And you can find out more at seedlingfilm.com/offshoot. Imogene, an original play by Bob Stevenson, is 7:30 today and tomorrow, 2:30 Sunday, at Breedlove Auditorium at the University of Arkansas at Fort Smith. Again, this is a premiere that you get to see for $6. The Importance of Being Earnest, presented by the Village Players, is at 7:30 today and tomorrow and 2 o'clock Sunday at White Auditorium at ANWAC. Tickets are $8 to $12. And the greatest band ever, okay, my favorite band ever, a really great band, Trout Fishing in America, is playing twice this weekend at home. They're in concert at 10 o'clock Saturday at the Northwest Arkansas Mall as part of the Buddy Walk for the Down Syndrome Connection.
We should mention that's 10 a.m.
Yes, 10 a.m. So that's a great kids show. And they're in concert again at 3:30 Sunday afternoon as part of the Community Fall Festival in Gentry. Both of them are free. And they are out and about in support of their new CD, Looking at Lucky, which is the first album they've done for grown-ups in 11 years, presuming that there are any grown-ups among us. And don't forget, Kyle and his wife Laura have a little gig this weekend that you might want to take part in.
Well, we really don't do that much. We're the co-MCs for the Gridiron Show. It's other journalists and the like who have put in all the weeks learning how to sing and dance and memorizing lines. We'll just be there introducing things.
This year, the show is called Gridiron in 3D, Dizzy, Daffy, and Disorderly. It's at 7:30 tonight and 7:30 tomorrow night. Two shows only. If you missed it, all you can do is listen to people talk about it for the next year.
That's
it's
right.
At Rogers Little Theater, and tickets are $25. Proceeds go to scholarships for journalists. So if you believe in journalism, it's a great place to put your money. If you just believe you'd like to have a good belly laugh at other people's expense, we got you covered.
All right. Do you have Ray's fever out there?
No, I know what sport you're talking about.
Yeah,
I'm more interested in live oaks with Spanish moss and sailboats. It's pretty.
Okay, well, the baseball team there is in the playoffs, that's all.
Yes.
But
yes,
there's plenty to do there.
I know
okay.
What sport it
okay.
Is.
All right.
Becca, if you need plenty more to do in Northwest Arkansas, check out nwaonline.com/whatsup or nwatunedin.com because there's a million things we didn't get to mention.
Becca Bacon Martin is the editor of What's Up, found in Northwest Arkansas newspapers. This is Ozarks at Large. This school year, many third graders around the region and around the state will see and hear Arkansas history in a way that most third graders before them haven't been able to experience. The musical presentation, Digging Up Arkansas, is a collaboration between Walton Arts Center in Fayetteville, Trike Theater, based in Bentonville, and the Arkansas Arts Council. The play, written by Mike Thomas, a public school teacher in Fayetteville, presents the state's history in an innovative manner. This summer, just after our Furman Garner Performance Studio was ready to go at KUAF, the three cast members of Digging Up Arkansas came to the radio station to record a few songs. With the school year now in full swing, we thought we'd present some of the music and conversation that took place that day, including a performance of the title song from the play. Here are Christy Hall, Jason Sewell, and Jules Taylor, the cast of Digging Up Arkansas, singing the song of the same name. Jason Sewell, Jules Taylor, and Christy Hall performing the song Digging Up Arkansas in the Furman Garner Performance Studio at KUAF. The play was commissioned by Walton Arts Center, co-produced by Trike Theater, and partially funded by Arkansas Arts Council. Jason Sewell of the cast explained to us how Mike Thomas's script, set in Arkansas more than 70 years ago, helps third graders today better grasp the state's history.
What happens is that this play is set in 1936. We are all workers for the Works Progress Administration, and we are on our way to Little Rock. The president, Franklin Delano Roosevelt, is coming to speak and to present because it is Arkansas's 100th birthday in 1936. We were a state formed in 1836. So we are on the way there. This is and we're on a train car, a leaky train car, and all of our crates and all of our documentation and everything gets tossed around in this train car. So we arrive in Little Rock with things scattered all over the place. And so our job, with the help of the audience members who are incorporated into the performance as historians, they are helping us to put all of the correct items, everything, back into the correct crates. And so through putting them in the boxes, we end up telling the stories of all of the four different areas that we focus on during the play.
What's great about the script, what's great about the songs, is Mike has obviously assumed that third, fourth, and fifth graders are intelligent young people. It doesn't talk down to them. It, you know, I've only seen this performed in front of a group of adults, and they were as riveted. It's a pretty amazing script and a pretty amazing performance.
Yeah, and it's really interesting how engaged the young people are when we perform. As soon as we come on singing songs, and one of the fun things about the script and how Mike has written it is that we get to assume different characters, a host of different characters during the performance, and it's so interesting to watch. As soon as we put on a different hat or a different scarf or become this different person, immediately the students are engaged with us, whatever we're doing. I mean, they're engaged the whole time, but you can just see that light go on, you know.
And that is one of the things that's really excellent about Digging Up Arkansas is Mike, as a school teacher, taught third grade for a long time, so he knows how to communicate to third graders. But what's really excellent about our play is it does totally appeal to adults to all levels, because it is, it's really, really intelligent, and the third and through fifth graders totally get it. But also the adults are just as interested in what's going on.
Bring me a little water, Sylvie. Bring me a little water now. Bring me a little water, Sylvie.
Every little once in a while. Bring me a little water, Sylvie. Bring me a little water now. Bring me a little water, Sylvie. Every little once in a while. Bring me a little water, Sylvie. Bring me a little water now. Bring me a little water, Sylvie. Every little once in a while.
That last song you performed, Sylvie, when does that come into the show? How does that work?
That's in our Civil War section. We have a whole section of Civil War in which we talk about slavery. And so that song was one of the, is like a field song that slaves sang in the field. And so that's, as Jason was just speaking about, we assume a lot of different characters. This is a moment when we assume characters of slaves who are picking cotton. And we sing that as if we're in the fields.
And it transitions nicely into where we go into the Civil War. So that happens just the moment before we transition into different characters who are Civil War soldiers. Through the process of creating this, we were all a part of kind of the creation process, which took months. We met weekly to talk about the script and to develop the script and everything. And there is so much rich Arkansas history, so many stories we could have told, that at some point we had to start fine-tuning and streamlining exactly what we were going to tell. And we think that Mike and I guess the whole everybody who's worked on the show has done a really good job of picking out those areas of interest, and we're pretty proud of it, I think.
It's really quite amazing how much information is in less than an hour show. There's a lot of great facts.
Adult fans of the show include Arkansas's First Lady, Ginger Beebe. She includes photographs of the cast on her website. The show has also been performed for Arkansas legislators and school teachers. This summer, the Wingate Charitable Foundation awarded a challenge grant of $75,000 to expand Digging Up Arkansas to schools and communities not just in Northwest Arkansas, but all over the state. Over this coming year, the foundation will match dollar for dollar funds to support performances for more than 5,000 students statewide. Before the cast left that morning from KUAF, they asked if we had time for them to record one more song. We said yes.
So in 1917, a woman from Arkansas, Eva Ware Barnett, went to New York because she wanted to be an opera singer. And, of course, that's crazy in 1917 that she did that, that she had the drive to do that. And she became a pretty popular opera singer, but she was missing Arkansas so much that she wrote this beautiful, sweet little song that just sings the praises of it and how much she loved it. I mean, it's so from the heart. And then it has a history of Arkansas adopting the song as its state song. Mm-hmm. And then in the 40s, somebody stepped forward and said, wait a minute, I wrote that song too. And so they pulled the song as a state song. And then when the copyright ran out and it went into public domain again, they readopted it as a state song. So Arkansas actually has three official state
songs.
And this is one of them. I am thinking tonight about the Southland, of the time of my childhood days, where I wandered through the woods and the meadow, by the mill and the brook that plays, where the roses are in bloom and the sweet magnolia too, where the jasmine is white and the fields are violet blue. There a welcome awaits all our children who have wandered afar from home. Arkansas, Arkansas, tis a name dear, tis the place I call home, sweet home. Arkansas, Arkansas, I salute thee,
from thy shelter no more I'll roam. It's a land full of joy and of sunshine, rich in pearls and in diamonds fair, where faith, hope, and love greet a stranger who may wander neath her portals fair, where the rice fields are full and the cotton, corn, and hay, they're the fruits of the land, bloom in winter months and May. She's the land that I love most of all, dear, and to her let us all give cheer. Arkansas, Arkansas, 'tis a name dear, 'tis the place I call home, sweet home. Arkansas, Arkansas, I salute thee, from thy shelter no more I'll roam. Arkansas, Arkansas, 'tis a name dear, 'tis the place I call home, sweet home. Arkansas, Arkansas, I salute thee, from thy shelter no more I'll roam.
Jules Taylor, Christy Hall, and Jason Sewell, the cast of Digging Up Arkansas, in the Furman Garner Performance Studio at KUAF. The play was commissioned by Walton Arts Center, co-produced by Trike Theater, partially funded by Arkansas Arts Council. This is Ozarks at Large. Tonight at the River Park Pavilion at 100 North B Street in Fort Smith, the Saving Paws benefit will feature magic, comedy, and the music of the Chris Cameron Band. The event will help the Ahimsa Rescue Foundation, based in Muldrow. The foundation rescues and adopts about 150 animals annually and is in the process of converting a former nursing home into an animal rescue, sanctuary, and adoption facility. This morning, the founder and director of Ahimsa Rescue Foundation, Teresa Morton, talked about the organization.
Well, we organized Ahimsa Rescue Foundation in 2002 because of the need to help homeless and abandoned animals and to help at the Muldrow City Pound that did not have an adoption program. And it has grown from there. Ahimsa Rescue's pets currently live at private homes in foster care, and there's not enough room at private homes in foster care for all the animals that are needing rescue. City pounds only accept animals from within city limits. The local Humane Society stays full and unable to accept lots of animals, and some counties don't have a Humane Society at all. So there are a lot of homeless animals that simply have no place to go and are left to die a miserable and tormented death.
And the name of the shelter is spelled A-H-I-M-S-A. What's the origin of that?
That is Hindu, I believe, and it means kindness to all life.
If I were to be at the shelter right now, and if we weren't talking on the phone and I were talking to you in person, what would I see? What would I find?
Well, the shelter is in the process of being renovated, so it's not ready to receive animals yet, but it consists of 25,000 square feet of indoor space, and it's set on 4 acres. And once it is renovated, it will feature cage-free housing facilities for the animals where they will live in a natural environment.
When did you yourself become not just an animal lover, but someone who, you know, would would become, I guess, an animal activist, giving a voice to those who don't have voices?
Probably my whole life. I recall from a young child of helping animals, and as a teenager, picking up animals off of the road that had been hit by a vehicle. And in my younger adult days, volunteering at local humane societies, and it's just continued to grow.
Teresa Morton is the founder and director of Ahimsa Rescue Foundation. Tonight, a fundraiser for the foundation and its shelter project is being held at the River Park Pavilion at 100 North B Street in Fort Smith. The event, including music from the Chris Cameron Band, is scheduled to last from 6 until 10 tonight. For more information about the foundation, ahimsarescuefoundation.org. This is Ozarks at Large. Local support for Ozarks at Large comes from the 22nd Annual Chili Pepper Cross Country Race, taking place Saturday, October 16th at the University of Arkansas's Cross Country Course located in Fayetteville. Over 80 college teams and 120 high school teams will be competing. Additionally, 750 individuals participate in the Open 10K and 1 Mile Fun Run. Registration and more information available at chilipepperfestival.org. This is KUAF 91.3 FM, Fayetteville, Fort Smith, Rogers, Durham, a listener-supported service of the Department of Journalism and Fulbright College of Arts and Sciences at the University of Arkansas. KUAF has proudly served as your source for NPR programming for the past 25 years. You can listen for free at our website, KUAF.com. On October 20th, KUAF's Fall On Air fundraiser will begin. But listeners are already sending in their contributions in hopes of making this KUAF's shortest ever fundraiser. We hope to reach our goal of $140,000 in just 3 days. You could really help us do that with your contribution in advance. Just send a check to KUAF in care of University of Arkansas, Fayetteville, 72701. Or you can contribute online right now at KUAF.com. If everyone listening right now contributed today, the fundraiser would be over even before it began. Ozarks at Large is a production of KUAF. I'm Kyle Kellums. Thanks so much for tuning in. And you can join Antoinette Grajeda Sunday morning at 9 for Weekend Ozarks at Large.